So, we get to talk about the Four Horsemen of Notre Dame. Actually, it was interesting. I went to school with the great-grandchild of the quarterback, Stuhlgart.
Yeah, that's
the one. Yeah, yeah.
I knew so, the Massillon connection there.
Yeah, so that was kind of interesting. So, all right, well, we're starting to get into some of the stuff that's a little bit more unpleasant. All right, and so we're going to get into some things here. And I threw up some pictures up there of what to expect. So these guys are the ones that are going to be coming at you. Artist rendition. Anyway, so let's see if we can get into some of the stuff and see if we can make some sense of it. Revelation, we're going to go back to chapter 6. Now, if you remember where we've gone so far, basically, in 1, John goes up, sees Jesus in a whole different light than he has before. And Jesus is basically saying, hey, write all this stuff down. Then the first thing he goes after is the existing churches and us today. That's that 70th week thing. By the way, if you don't have a handout, there's a handout right in front of you. Okay, make sure you got. Want to make sure you're taken care of. Yeah, there's another. Yeah, when somebody gets up there, just hand them, kind of make sure they get them as they get in there. But, so, then he gets into the churches and he has a message for each of the churches, and that includes us today. And it's interesting because if you really read through it, while probably the seventh church is the one that resembles us the most, we have a little bit of those features in all of them in us. And while he's giving them accolades, he's also giving them warnings. And so we want to make sure that we heed them. Then we got into chapters 4 and 5. And we got into the throne, we got into the scroll, and now really we're really talking some more about that scroll. Alright? So, Eric, you want to make sure she gets one of these? There. Yeah. There's some handouts there on the corner for you if you want them. Alright, so you got it. Good. And so now we're really taking that scroll the next step. Because we've seen that the scroll was actually sealed with 7 seals. And so those seals are now going to get broken one by one. Now, if we go back to, I'm just going to go right down your outline there I gave you, you can hand out. And we'll talk about the four horsemen. But if we want to understand what we're going to be getting into, this is going to be I'll call it the best of times, the worst of times, these two chapters we're covering. The worst of times because of the devastation and things that are going to go on. The best of times because of the revival that's going to take place. All right? But when you go back in American history and you start looking up and you just kind of Google, what are some of the worst times in the world's history, the world's worst devastation periods? And you get on there at things like World War I, World War II, the Holocaust, the Black Plague of Europe, the bombs that devastated Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the transatlantic slave trade. These are the ones that come up when you Google them. All of that's going to pale in comparison to what's about to happen. That's nothing compared to what's about to happen over the next several chapters from like 6 through 19. All right. We also want to have some perspective on what's going to happen. Now, does anybody in this room want to have an STD? Okay, no? No sexual transmission diseases, right? Well, you don't want to have, yeah, well, somebody said, what's that got to do with it? You don't want to have an STB either, okay? You don't want to go through the seals, the trumpets, and the bowls. Okay, you don't want that either. You want to stay as far away from that as you possibly can. So, as a Christian, because we won't be here, the rapture, then, hey, we don't have to go through it. But what about those people who do? Sometimes you hear people come up, well, what about my brother or my sister or my daughter or my cousin or my friend? And what if they're not saved? Are they doomed? The answer is yes, without the mercy of God. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in chapter 7 when we get there. But for right now, let's just get through chapter 6. So, one thing we want to know, now this is going to be a big deal, because this is where there is some people that have various viewpoints on this, but I'm going with where the majority of people are on this. If you understand, you have a document, a scroll, okay? It is sealed by seven different seals, all right? These seals aren't something that happen, and then after that, chronologically, then this trumpet stuff happens, and then after that, chronologically, your bowl judgments happen, all right? The seals, think of it like if the document was a book and the seals were the index, okay? And it's going to describe to you the contents in general for the book. Remember we talked the very first week about how sometimes, like when we went back and my daughter asked me the question, how was man made twice at the beginning, the first part of Genesis, they have where it says that God made man, then after that it comes right back and God made man again, all right? But the first was just a general overview, then they got specific. It's the same idea here. So as we go through these seals, you're getting a overall picture of what is about to happen throughout the entire period. And then what he's going to do is he's going to break it back down into really specific from there. Okay? Probably one of the better ways I can give you to understand it is right here. If you look at this, you've got seven seals, and we'll get into what they are, but we're going to talk about six of them. Then there's going to be what we call a parenthetical pause. In other words, something that simply says, we're going to give you more information about what's going on. And then you're going to go to the seventh seal, which contains this. Got it? We go to the seventh trumpet, which contains this. It's kind of like, you ever seen fireworks go off? And when fireworks go off, they go up in the air, and then all of a sudden, when you think it's done, one of them, you know, the fireworks bursts again, and then one of them inside that bursts again. Think of it that way. That's what's actually happening here, okay, when you look at it, okay? Unless you can read Hebrew, you're not going to get this. Don't try, okay? So, but that's really what's happening when you're trying to figure out the context of it. All right, so let's go into these guys a minute and see who they are. All right. Now, the first seal, let's read it. It says, verses 1 and 2, I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals. By the way, I'm going NIV here, so if you don't have it, just read yours. Then I heard one of the four living creatures say in a voice like thunder, come. I looked, and there before me was a white horse. Its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown. And he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest. When you see all the Western movies, remember them? The guy comes in on the white horse with the white hat. Who's that always? The good guy, right? Okay? This is not the good guy, all right? But a lot of people are going to think it is. There will be people that will be deceived to think it is the good guy. It's not the good guy. As a matter of fact, if you look, go to Matthew. We're just going to go to that one. Matthew 24. In fact, you might want to keep your finger in there because we're going to refer to that one several times. Okay, Matthew 24. And we'll go to verses 4 and 5. So just keep your finger on Matthew. Everybody there?
What chapter?
4. And just kind of keep your finger there. Maybe put your pen there, or put a pencil there, a marker there or something, so that way you can get back to it a lot. Because we're going to go back to that a lot. Matthew chapter 24. I'm sorry. Matthew chapter 24. I apologize. I'm thinking verses. Matthew. We're going to the Olivet Discourse here. So, verses 4 and 5. Jesus answered them. Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name and will deceive many. They're going to say they're the Christ. This is what's going to happen here. Now mark that place in your book. Just keep a pen there. Put your bulletin in there. Do something. Put your bulletin in. That'll help you. There you go. All right, because we're going to go back to 24 a lot. So That's just the Olivet Discourse. That's that when Jesus is walking with the disciples. They go to the Mount of Olives and they start asking him questions about what's going to happen, what are going to be the signs of the end and everything else. And that's what this whole conversation is about there. All right? Now, note something. This is a counterfeit Christ. If you hand me a $20 bill, okay, and it's got Obama's picture on it, I don't want it. If it's got Reagan's picture on it, I don't want it. If it's got Trump's picture on it, I don't want it. It better have Jackson's picture in it or else I don't want it. All right? It may look like it, but you know what? I don't want it. If it has 100, it better have Franklin on there or I don't want it. And that's exactly what's happening here. But there are ways to know that this is a counterfeit. I'm not even going to ask what that noise is, but it's, the thermostat?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're good. So, just let's look at a couple of them. It says he comes with a crown. Jesus doesn't come in until Revelation 19, and the crown that Jesus wears, the Greek word for that was called diadem. We've heard of that one, if you remember your hymns and songs. And it means many crowns. So remember the song, Crown Him with Many Crowns? Okay? He has many crowns, not a crown. The crown, the Greek word for this one, for this rider coming in, is Stephanos. It means a crown like a wreath that you won in a race. It's a temporary award, putting somebody up above some other people, but it's a temporary thing. It's a wreath-type recognition award. So it's a different kind of crown. It also says on there that he comes with a bow. Notice, and this is important, there's an error on here. If you look at the guy with the white horse and the bow, a lot of times they'll picture him with an arrow. There's no arrow. There's no arrow. There's a bow. There's a reason. Okay? Because this guy, his arrows are going to be his words. The darts. This is going to be stuff coming out of his mouth. He is going to be charismatic. This guy is going to be so good at what he does. He's going to be a political genius. This guy is going to be the best talker, the manipulator, the negotiator. He's going to be he's going to prosper peace. I mean, this guy is probably handsome. We don't know that for sure. But something that people are attracted to, he's going to be good. But the darts of his mouth, the arrows, whenever you see in Scripture something with a bow and arrow, it's generally something that is being evil. Okay? That's why Paul talks about the shield of faith, to protect against the darts and arrows, for that very thing. We talk about that. So he's coming with a bow, no arrows. And the enemy is trying to attack you. That's what that usually means when you're getting in there. That's what I wrote it down here for you. Now, trouble is, again, the people are going to buy it. This time, go back to Matthew 24 again, same chapter we were just in. Because what makes people think they're going to, does Jesus say it's going to happen? Yeah, go to 24, but this time go to verses 24 through 26. 24 through 26, I'm going to read it to you. It says, there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles to deceive even the elect, if that were possible. See, I have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, there he is, out in the desert, do not go out. Or, here he is, in the inner rooms, do not believe it. In other words, Jesus is warning people. And this person's going to have the ability to do signs and wonders and miracles and false. You mean that the devil and his agents can do miracles? I thought they couldn't do that. I thought only God could do that. Oh, yeah. Let me give you back to one quick example, okay? Do you remember when Moses was in front of Pharaoh? Remember that? Remember when he cast down his rod and turned into the snake, right? But what did Pharaoh's people do? Same. Now, their snakes got eaten, right? But they were able to do it. Why? Evil has that ability. It doesn't have God's ability. They're not omniscient, They're not on the present, etc. But they have the ability, and Satan has that ability. And in signs and wonders, that's why you're going to see the Antichrist has that ability to do that. All right? He can deceive many. And so, and think about it. In the early church, the Holy Spirit was working in the lives of people, but in many cases, when people saw a miracle, we see it over and over again, they saw and believed, and they went out and told everybody else, right? That's sometimes how easily people can be deceived. Because what if they see a false miracle, but they believe it to be true? Looks good, smells good, my senses are telling me that this is real, and it's not. So that's why it's so important to be rooted in the Word and understand the Word so you can recognize the truth from that which isn't. It's important. That's why we're going through some of this now. So, this is the Antichrist. Jesus shows up in Revelation 19. He is carrying a sword dipped in the blood of his enemies. The Antichrist is going to bring a temporary peace for a season. He's going to bring peace between the Arabs and Jews. He'll even build a temple for the Jews without opposition from the Arab nations. There's a group right now called the Temple Mount Society. They're preparing things right now, the instruments and the elements for temple worship. In the middle of that seven-year period, the Antichrist, this white rider, he is going to break the covenant. The term used is the abomination of desolation. We've all heard that. This guy is going to be bent on conquest. His one thing is, and he does it on purpose, he's deceiving people. He's going to make them think everything is going wonderful for about 3.5 years. Then he, by his own volition, is going to actually turn everything to where it's going to go to worldwide devastation. He doesn't come alone. He comes with help. The second seal. The red horse, okay? We're not talking about a roan. We're talking about bright red, okay? This horse, let's talk about it. It's verses 3 and 4. When the Lamb opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." And then another horse came out, a fiery red one. Its rider was given power to take peace from the earth and to make men slay each other. To him was given a large sword. This one, the color of the in red in the Bible is usually referring to tragedy, but this horse is going to take away all the peace in the world, just as the Antichrist has planned all along. And this is basically, think of this as the horse of war. He's going to send the whole world into war. Now, we'll see descriptions of that as we get further into the further chapters. But this is giving you an overview of what's going to be happening in the future. He's going to set the whole world into war, and there's going to be more war and more killing than ever before. You realize today the capacity we as a mankind have to kill each other? When it was sticks and stones and bows and arrows, it was limited. Okay? When we got the guns, we could do it from further away. Then we got the nuclear weapons. Now we can do it with drones. Okay? Do you know right now they've got enough nuclear weapons on the earth that if they actually use them, if everybody used the capacity, the entire earth could be destroyed in under an hour? That's what's there. It's available. You know. Now, again, keep in mind, during John's time, how do you describe something that he's never seen before if, and I say that carefully, if nuclear weapons and what he saw was part of what he was envisioning? Why do I say if? Because a lot of people throughout prophecy have always tried to take whatever their technology was of that day and say, this is how it's going to happen. We don't know that for sure. We can guess, but we don't know that for sure. What we do know is it's going to be worldwide war and devastation, and we've got the capacity right now to really go at it and screw each other up. Okay? So let's just keep it simple. The Antichrist comes on his horse. He's charming, charismatic, makes promises and set peace with one intention in mind. He's going to take this whole thing over. He wants to make it all about him, and he's going to go ahead and try and be the worldwide leader at some point. We'll see later. And he's going to set the whole world into chaos, war. The third horse. The third seal, the black horse. The black horse is where you're going to get into scarcity and inequity. What are we talking about there? When you have a war, the result of war, usually famine follows. Every world war or large campaign war has devastated an area to the point where the next step afterwards is lack of provision, including food, sometimes shelter, okay, the necessities, as we would call them, of life, water in many cases. And that black horse is that person saying that there will be scarcity, there will be inequity. You'll see that in one of the lines in there. So let's read what that black horse is all about, verses 5 and 6. When the Lamb opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come," and I looked, and before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice of the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a day's wages, 3 quarts of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil and the wine." Okay, so let's just go through it real quick. A quart of, in other words, sometimes you see in some texts it says denarius. A denarius was basically a day's wage. Okay, and so if they were saying that you're going to have to go ahead and take an entire day's wage to get just a day's worth of food. And for those people who can't afford the good food, barley was something you fed the horse, not wheat. Okay, so you can get 3 times as much barley as you can wheat for the same amount of money. So you could get horse food, if you wanted to, for the cost of an entire day's wage. That's what they're saying. It'll cost you just work all day long to survive that day, one day at a time. So, you know, we think of things in our lives today where I go to work and I got a 401k I'm putting aside for my future. Hey, we're going to go ahead and set aside money to be able to do this or that. There won't be any of that. People will scrimp and save, and they'll work all day long, and they won't work just 8 hours and go home. They'll be literally from the time they open their eyes to the time they close, trying to make just enough to be able to survive the day. That's what they're saying. But on the end of that, he says, look at the last line. It says, do not damage the oil and the wine. What's that all about? What he's saying there is the oil and wine were things of luxury. What they're saying is there will be those people, though, who have things of luxury. Who are those people going to be? They're going to be the people who, I'll use this word carefully, cooperate with the Antichrist. Why? Because the Antichrist and his agents at that point, because we're into the third horse by now, are now controlling everything. They're in control. They control, as you'll see later with the mark of the beast, the ability to buy and sell, to be able to get food, to get shelter. Think of it this way, and we'll talk about this in depth when we get there, but if you were told right now you could no longer go to the grocery store or any place that requires money, credit cards, or anything unless you had that mark of the beast, if you could not buy food, you couldn't have a place to live, okay? You have no means of transportation except for your legs. You cannot get medicine of any kind or medical help of any kind. Nothing. Not, you can't do anything. Think about what that would do. Think about how that would affect your life. Okay? Now, obviously, we're not going to take the mark of the beast, but the bottom, there's angels running around saying, don't do that. But I guess my point is this. That's what's being covered here when we talk about famine, and we're talking about the result of war. He is in control. The people who cooperate with him will have a lot. Those people who don't will have nothing. They won't even have the ability to go get anything. So that's part of what we're talking about, and I say it's an overview. Remember I said these seals are more like an index of what's going to happen in the book? Part of what we talk about later, we get in the mark of the beast, etc., that's all going to be in this kind of area here. What's going on in here and what's causing this overview. That's why if you look, each of the horses is so brief in its description of what's happening. It's not getting into detail yet. Okay. The fourth seal. The pale horse. Okay. That's verses 7 and 8. When the Lamb opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, "Come." And I looked, and before me was a pale horse. The actual word used in Greek is chloros. The word chlorine or chlorophyll, actually, technically, it will be a green horse. Have any of you ever seen a green horse and you're not high? Okay? You'll get to see a fiery red one, and you're going to get to see a pale green one. All right? So a green horse, a chloros horse, or you sometimes they'll call it a pale or pale green horse. All right? So here he goes. And its rider was named Death. And Hades was following close behind him. We'll see where Hades is released and all the demons come out and the locusts and so on. That's all part of the description of what's going to happen there. Okay? They were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword and famine and plague and by wild beasts. So what's happening is you've got the first horse, Antichrist, coming and deceiving people. He's the first one because he's going to be in charge of this whole mess that's going to come up. Then you're going to have the fiery red one where he throws the world into war. You got the black one following it saying, okay, as a result of war, we've got famine and devastation and people who will have a lot that'll be in charge, but the rest of the world won't. You won't even be able to get it unless the Antichrist says so. And then as a result of that, you go into the next step where is what's left. Well, you go into the fourth seal, it says, disease, wild beasts. Think with me a minute. When they talk about wild beasts, people think of lions and tigers, and that's a possibility. We don't know that for sure. We know it could be some large beasts feasting on the devastation that's been left, but it could be something very simple. Okay? For example, okay, plague. What wild beast was it that devastated most of Europe? A rat. A simple thing like a rat. Why? Because it carried disease and the black plague. See, a lot of people want to try and to say this is exactly what it means. We don't know exactly what it means. We do know this, that some sort of animal or creation, bacteria, etc., is going to wipe out a whole bunch of people. We do know that. And I think that's the more important issue. Let's not get hung up on exactly what caused it or what the animal looks like. Let's just understand that it's not going to be pretty, okay, when we get done. I put in here a little bit of information, as you see on there, on the fourth seal. Okay, there's going to be predators out there. People will be weakened at the time, and they're going to be vulnerable. A fourth of the earth is going to get killed. That's a lot of people. Think about that. You realize right now that that would be like wiping out all of China, okay, all of Hong Kong, and almost all of Japan at the same time. All of it. Poof, gone. Off the face of the earth. Okay? Not saying those are the ones going to get wiped out. Don't misquote me. But you get the idea. That's a lot of folks. Let's go to the next seal. Verse 9. The fifth seal. When he opened up the fifth seal. And let's do this. This might help a little bit. When he opened up the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain from the sword of God and the testimony they had maintained. They called out in a loud voice, "How long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and avenge our blood?" Then each of them was given a white robe, and they were told to wait a little longer until the number of their fellow servants and brothers who were to be killed as they had been completed. These are martyrs. Most of them martyrs. Some of them, because may have died from starvation and other things as a result of not being able to take the mark of the beast because they were faithful. But they're really referring to those that gave up their lives because of their faith. Let's just phrase it that way. Regardless of how it happened, they stood by their faith, they lost their life as a result of it. And what they're saying here is that those people will be in heaven. They're going to be clothed in white. That's what they're referring to. So as you look at your notes here, it says, As a result of the greatest revival in world history, many who will come to believe, and we'll talk about that in chapter 7, but they will be martyred during the tribulation. But it can't be us, the church, because it says, if you look back, the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church. That's Jesus' own words. Those Christians who come to Christ during the tribulation will find themselves being blamed for the world's woes. It's happened throughout history by the likes of Nero. Remember when Nero said he blamed the Christians for burning down Rome, when it was actually him that did it? Okay. Hitler blamed the Jews. He wanted a scapegoat there because he said the Jews were responsible for everything. The Antichrist will blame Christians for all the world's woes and worlds. And because of his miracles and signs and wonders and the ability to negotiate peace and his charismatic personality, people will start to believe him and follow him. And today, with the media like we have it today, think of the influence the media has on the society today. The fact that he's got that at his disposal. There are people that say, if it's on TV, it's got to be true. If it's on the internet, it's got to be true. Think of the disposal this Antichrist is going to have to being able to deceive the world and change his opinions. We see it every day in our lives right now. You know, now, again, we've got a very controversial thing going on right now as we look at the radio recently and we hear about what's going on with the confirmation of a judge, and people are so polarized on this whole thing on both sides of it. Where I work, there's people arguing both sides of it right now, constantly almost getting into battles over something. It's really so stupid. But what happens is that people are polarized because of what the media is saying on both sides. And one is so firmly entrenched that one person's right and the other person's wrong and one person's lying and one person isn't because of the media. Think about what the Antichrist can do using that. How he can influence a society to blame Christians for everything that's going on. And how many will, because of his signs and wonders and charismatic personality, will believe him. It's a shame. But there's going to be many that won't. Yeah.
Rob, how do you reconcile the desire by those that were martyred to seek retribution? Also, there evidently is a realization of time because they're anxious for something to happen.
Well, remember, time, God's time is not our time. Yeah. So that's a whole different perspective on time as we get to heaven. And you know what? I don't know that I have an answer for motivation behind what they're saying. I think there's too many ways to different speculate on that. Well, I think what the real issue there is talking about the fact there are martyrs, but Jesus is saying at the time, or the angel is saying, wait, there's going to be more. And it's really describing, again, this is a great way to be able to show this is an overview of the entire following chapters to come, because throughout those chapters, you're going to see people dying for their faith. And so it's not a matter of saying, for example, if you go to the, we talked about the pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, we talked partial trib, where people are saying they're going to go up a little bit at a time. Okay, that's kind of where this says, no, that's not happening. Okay, we're gone, but there's going to be people that die. They're going to get their white robe when they're up there. Okay, but Jesus is going to come back later for everybody. All right, but he's saying, wait, the time's not right. There's going to be more of you joining you. And it's really talking about a span of time where there's going to be martyrdom. That's really the emphasis there. You know, I don't want to get into speculation on their motivation because there's too many different ways you can take that.
Rob, there are numerous prophecies in the Old Testament of the great day of the Lord, and that the Lord would come and, you know, take vengeance on his enemies and those who persecuted his people. And I see this merely as those who are martyred.
Yeah.
You know, waiting.
Referring to that.
You know, how long till you fulfill your word? How long can you do what you say you're going to do? Mm-hmm. Not that they're desiring, you know, the punishment of their enemies. They're desiring God to fulfill his promise.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Let's go on here. So we're going to talk about the white robes. As I said on here later, you'll see it says the white robe signifies purity. They're told just to wait a little bit longer because this is spanning a period of time throughout the rest of the books. Okay, then it says on verses 12 through 17, all the kings of the earth, and we're getting into let's get ahead of myself here a little bit. Here we go. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth, made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red, and the skies, and the stars in the skies fell to the earth as figs drop from a tree when shaken by a strong wind. The sky receded like a scroll rolling up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Then the kings of the earth and the princes and generals, the rich, the mighty, and every slave and every free man hid in caves among the rocks of the mountains. They called the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. For the great day of their wrath has come. Who can stand? And that gets down to that word wrath again. That's what you were referring to a moment ago. But let's look at this a minute. Again, this is a kind of a good explanation of the fact that when we get into this sixth seal, it's really referring to the end chapters in Revelation. When they talk about the sky rolling up, if you would, we're talking about at that point where everything's gone. There's going to be a new heaven, new earth. All right? So as I said, that kind of is another indicator. We're looking at more or less an index of what's inside of the scroll. It says, all the kings of the earth, all the others free and slave, now realize their doom. This can't be the church. Again, remember, and I gave you verses in here that say, we've not been appointed under wrath. The sky rolling up like a scroll, and every mountain has been removed to its place. Is a reference probably to the new heaven and a new earth. And the ever in Revelation, check out your chapters, check out the verses I gave you. It says, who can stand? Only believers can stand. All right? And that means we're not there. We're not there. That's the reason why we don't have to worry about it. So just to kind of get an overview on six, because I want to get into seven. I don't want to run out of time on this. We go through the seals. We're saying the Antichrist comes, deception. Causes war, which causes famine. Strife, inequity, which causes death. Over a quarter of the world's going to get wiped on just that alone. During the process of this, there will be saints who will be persecuted, die, receive their white robes. All right? And there'll also be, at the end, you see, as we get later into Revelation, that's where you're going to see things like, as we may term them, we think it could be asteroids, other things, but it'll be some sort of something hitting the earth. They say, for example, later you're going to see where he talks about hail, about 100 pounds each. We think hail's big like this. Try a 100-pounder hitting you on the head. All right? So, but it's referring to that here. Okay? And then this is going to drop us into chapter 8, where it actually begins. All right? So this is simply a sequence of what you're going to see through the tribulation period. All the way through until 19, when Jesus comes back. All right, so let's just kind of keep that perspective. Let's go to 7. The 144 seal. The four corners of the earth. Okay, after I saw this, we'll choose just verse 1. After I saw this, four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth, to prevent any wind from blowing on the land or the sea or on any tree. When they usually use the word the four corners of the earth, most of the time they're referring to the four corners of a compass. I gave you an example you can look up in Hosea. The winds are often used as a way of speaking of just the destructive force of God. So whenever you hear about the winds in the Old Testament, it's usually referring to destruction. And if you look at the four horsemen they're talking about here, and it's kind of a reference to the four winds or the four horsemen, go back to Zechariah, and that's just right before Matthew, etc., a little bit before in the small books, and you can read 1 through 8. That's going to be Zechariah 6, 1 through 8. Here we go. Zechariah, Z-E-C-H-A-R-I-A, chapter 6, 1 through 8. I looked up again, and there before me were four chariots coming out between two mountains, mountains of bronze. The first chariot had red horses, the second black, the third white, the fourth dappled, all of them powerful. I asked the angel who was speaking to me, "What are these, my Lord?" The angel answered me, "These are the four spirits of heaven going out and standing in the presence of the Lord, the whole world. The one black horse is going toward the north. The one of the white horses is going toward the west, the dappled toward the south. When the powerful horses went out, they were straining to go out throughout the earth. And he said, go throughout the earth. So they went throughout the earth. Then he called to me and said, look, those going to the north country have been given my spirit. Rest in the hand in the land of the north." Again, they're getting into the idea of the horsemen, the spirits, the power of God going out in all directions and having havoc on earth. Verse 2. Then I saw another angel coming up from the east, having the seal of God. He called out in a loud voice to the four angels who have been given the power to harm, there it is, the land and the sea. Do not harm the land or the sea until the trees, or the trees, until the seal have been put on the foreheads of the servants of our God. In other words, he said, wait. The seal of the living God. What are we referring to? Let's go to the book of John. John. Gospel of John. New Testament. We're going to go to chapter 6, verse 27. Chapter 6, 27. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures up to eternal life, which is the Son of Man, which the Son of Man will give you. Here it comes. On him, the Son of Man, Jesus, God the Father has placed his seal of approval. In other words, he has been sealed. All right. You and I have also been sealed because we have the seal of the Holy Spirit. A little different, but we also have the seal. Then he's going to go through here, and we're going to save a little time on the 12 tribes, but then he said, I heard the number of those who were sealed, 144,000 from all the tribes of Israel. Then he lists the tribes. Interestingly enough, though, when you go through that list, and I spend a little time giving you some notes on this because it's interesting, because a lot of people want to get into, again, they want to dig into the minutiae of this and they get hung up on it. It said the 144 who were sealed are revealed. It's the 12 tribes of Israel. Note, it's not the church. It's Israel. All right? Have you ever noticed something? Any of you ever seen a geography book for classes? Okay? And when the front of the book, they give you a picture of the globe. And they always have the United States and North America and South America on the front of the globe, don't they? Very self-centered. If you really want to look at it, the center of the world, biblically and spiritually, is Jerusalem. If you want to be accurate, they should have Jerusalem right there in the middle, and then we're off to the side out here somewhere. All right? It's about the Jews here. All right? Now, there are many people that have claimed to be the 144,000. I made note of the most prominent one was the Jehovah's Witnesses. They still believe it today. They actually believe that they were the ones that are going to be going up the 144,000 until there were more than 144,000 Jehovah's Witnesses. Then they said only select Jehovah's Witnesses get to go. I know people that are Jehovah's Witnesses, some very close, and they still believe it today. All the rest of us, when we die, we're going to blank out and go to blackness nowhere. Until later. Yeah.
Question. Mm-hmm. It says here the tribe of Joseph, but Joseph was separated into Manasseh and Ephraim.
That's right.
In the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Manasseh is mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So is the tribe of Joseph supposed to be Ephraim, or what happened to Ephraim?
Okay, you see where we got down there a little bit further, where we're talking about that? Look at the notes on there.
No, I have not.
Okay, the tribe of Dan, you don't find him either.
No.
Dan was left out. Why? Some say it's because Dan was thought of as the tribe of the Antichrist, and I gave you verses to back that up. Correct or incorrect, Dan is not mentioned, but he is definitely the first tribe to introduce idolatry into the nation of Israel. And I gave you the verses to back that up. Dan is the first tribe listed, though, on Ezekiel's millennial roll call of tribes. I gave you that. And if you think about it, what they're saying is Dan was left out, potentially, people think, because of his introduction of idolatry, but he's the first on the list, and that kind of shows you God's grace, his redemptive grace. Ephraim is also not mentioned by name either, but referred to through Joseph, even though Manasseh is named. Okay? Again, they feel that possibly, and this is different people who argue the point, because Ephraim was also associated with great idolatry, and I've got the backup verse from Hosea. In the Bible, there's over 20 different listings of the tribes, including one that omits Dan, 2 Chronicles. Each variation is legitimate, but not merely symbolic, as some would have it, but they each serve a purpose to emphasize something specific. They're trying to specifically emphasize a point. We know further, the information tells us the 144,000 that we're talking about here that were sealed actually survived the period of God's wrath, so they'll go through it, because they get to meet Jesus at Mount Zion at his return in Revelation 14:1. We know a little bit more about them too. We know that they're celibate. We know they're the first fruits of the great harvest. We know that they're going to be part of the great revival. They're marked by integrity and faithfulness. There is going to be a period of time where there is going to be the greatest revival that mankind has ever known. And these guys are going to play a huge part in it. You know, we think of revivals like Billy Graham Crusades, and you get into D.L. Moody and the things he did. We go back to the Bible where over 3,000 people were saved at one time by the apostles. Remember that? Those are going to pale in comparison. Everything that's been accomplished from the time of Jesus to today, these evangelists, other believers that will be converted by them during that time, and as you'll see later on, and angels are going to be circling the earth saying, don't take the seal, etc. Okay? That whole thing is going to be the greatest revival that's ever been done in human history. They will accomplish in that small period of time what we haven't accomplished all this time from Jesus to now. It's going to be huge. That's really what chapter 7 is all about, is the revival, the opportunity to escape the rest. Now, chapters 9, or verse 9 and 10. After this, metaphysis again, after these things, in other words, next step, it's the division. Whatever you see after this, it's division in time. We talked about that. I looked, and before me, there was a great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, and people, and language, standing before the throne and in front of the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and holding palm branches in their hands. All right? Well, what's that all about? All right? And let's go a little further. And they cried out in a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. What they're saying there is, after all this, after these people have been sealed, after they've had a chance to do this, again, huge revival period, after this, I'm seeing the results of this in heaven. And they're sitting there in these white robes and are praising God in palms. Remember Palm Sunday? Remember them going in? Palms are a recognition of the deity, if you would, or honoring the person. They're honoring God with their palms. And so, if you go back down there again, I've got the great multitude. Have any of you ever met a messianic Christian? Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. There is nobody more on fire on a regular basis for Christ than a messianic Christian, because they know the Old Testament. And they actually know and view Christ as the Messiah they were waiting for. Man, they are on fire. So many of us get to be so lame, so content. You know, one or two things you're not allowed to talk about to other people in public, especially at work. Politics and religion. Okay? Those are the two things. What are the most important two things? Politics and religion that are going to affect your life. You don't talk about them. All right. So we're always talked to, not to. You get a messianic Christian, man, they don't care. They'll talk to everybody, man. Can you picture 144,000 of them on fire? If 12 messianic Christians, the apostles, can do what they did, what can these guys do with the work of the Holy Spirit over an entire globe? Amazing. So think about it. All right, now let's keep on trucking because I'm watching the clock up there. All right, here we go. All the heavenly creatures giving glory and praise. That's verse 11 and 12. And honor. 13 and 14. Then one of the elders asked me, "These in white robes, who are they? Where do they come from?" I answered, "Sir, you know." And he said, "These are the ones who have come out of the great tribulation. They've washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb." Therefore, and how can you do that? White in the blood of the Lamb? Bless you.
Thank you.
Let's go back. Well, I'll ask you on your own. You can go back to Isaiah, and I was going to read it, but I don't have the time for it. Isaiah 1 through 18. And if you go back there, you'll find out it talks about white and sins, crimson red, and being washed white. Okay, so it's in there. We say that most, if not all, were martyred because they didn't take the side of the beast. These are all the people that he's talking about here. And then what I love is the next verses. These are my most favorite verses in this whole section. And it says 15 through 17. It says, "Therefore, they are before the throne of God, and they serve him night and day." These are the people in the white robes. From all nations, by the way. That means it's got to be everybody out there. But the church isn't there, so it's all the nations of the earth. The evangelistic work has been done throughout the earth by the 140,000, the two witnesses that we're going to hear about later on, and the angel. What the work is that they've accomplished there. These are the white robes. They're there before God. They serve him night and day in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will spread his tent over them, protect them. I love this. "Never again will they hunger. Never again will they thirst. The sun will not beat upon them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and he will lead them to springs of living water. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." All the things that you and I deal with every day, the things that we have to try and endure to survive, the stresses and strains of life, whatever that may be, gone. The physical challenges, the emotional challenges, all those things that we fight with every day, gone. No more tears. No more worry. No more pain. Just the protection and the ability to be with the Lord every single moment forever. That is an amazing thing if you want to really think about that. If you really think about it. So what have we accomplished here? Well, let's think about this a minute. The four horsemen come. They deceive the world. War, famine, death comes upon the world. As a result of all that, throughout the period and the parts we're going to discuss now, from 8 through about 19, you're going to see persecution. You're going to see seals. Okay, or you're going to see the seal of the 144,000 at work. But you're also going to see things like the sign of the beast, his own version of his own seal. And the people, the devastation that that's going to cause, and death. You're going to see martyrdom. But you're also seeing on the backside of this right now, where do they go after they were martyred? They got white robes. They're in heaven. And they'll be going on through a period of time. And when that period of time is finally done, then we get past the trumpets, we get past the bowls we're going to talk about, then Christ is going to come back, and you're going to see him taking out his wrath, so to speak. Now, God is taking out, also purifying the world, but he's also giving, because you have to be pure, but he's also taking out those that he's saving. He's giving a chance for those people that are still here. For those people who aren't Christians, who have not accepted him, who have not been raptured, they still have an opportunity to be in heaven, but only one way. If they accept Christ. And here's my point to you. We don't know when we're going to be taken up. We have no idea when the rapture is going to take place. You may not make it down the hall. Okay? You may make it till the end of your life. Who knows? We don't know. Do you love your family? Mm-hmm. Seriously. Do you love the people around you, your friends? I mean, as in, like, you know, friendship, love? Do you care about the people around you? Do you care if they have to go through it? Why not take them away from it too? Let them go with you. Or at least plant the seeds so that if they don't accept Christ, you've planted the seeds for the Holy Spirit to harvest, so they're one of those people in a white robe. So that maybe after they're gone, after you're gone, they can recognize, you know what? I remember when Jim was talking to me, he said something about that. I didn't believe him, but. And they go back. That's the responsibility we have. That's part of our evangelistic responsibility. If I can get one thing out of this whole chapter thing for you, is to note that it's going to get nasty. We're not going to be here. But there are people that you and I know right now that if the rapture would happen today, okay, will be. And you and I, at least if nothing else, can plant a seed to maybe save them later. So take that to heart, okay? I was going to go ahead and play it, but I don't have the time because we had a lot going on to play through like we did last time, the verses. But I would ask you on your own, okay? By the way, any of you ever seen the Bible app? Okay? It's just, you can download it on your phone. It's the Bible app. Okay? I would highly suggest you get it. You can read any kind of translation you want. They're all in here. I happen to have NIV and the one that's right now. And you can actually just sit there and listen to it. I would really ask you, if you can, on your own at times, after we've gone through a study, any book, but this one especially, go back and just listen to it again for its whole purpose. And it gives you, because sometimes it's so easy to get caught up, and as one person used, I was talking with somebody out in the hallway, and he said, one of the reasons why I didn't want to get into this particular class was because sometimes when you get in these classes, they get caught up in, as he used the word, minutia, okay, of Revelation. It's real easy. You could turn this into a year-long study, easy, all right? We're still into Revelation Made Simpler, okay? We're in Revelation 101. We're trying to make it understandable so you get the idea of each book. And that's exactly what you do. If you go back and you just listen to it now after you've already heard what we talk about, you got notes in front of you, you can go back and dig into the scriptures that back up the things we're talking about. That's why I put them there. But just listen to it for its whole and try and get the picture of what they're really saying here. That this is an overview of what's going to happen, guys. This is a very colorful way, no pun intended, okay, of describing what's going to happen. And just read through it and try and see if you can get an understanding in general of what's going on. Okay? Don't get hung up on this little detail or that little detail. If you want to know more about that, after you get through the whole book, go back. You can ask. You got a great pastoral staff that's there to help you, okay? You can do some digging on your own. Ask questions, all right? But just remember, what is the purpose of this? This is simply saying bad things are coming, but we're not going to be here. It describes them, but on the other end, white robes, okay? No more tears, none, gone. And after we get through all this, chapter 19 will come, and he's coming back, only this time he's going to have a crown of many crowns. His sword is going to be dipped in the blood of his enemies, and we'll talk about that when we get there. Paul, can you close us in prayer?
Father God, we come to you thankful again this morning. Thankful for your eternal word of truth. Our prayer, Lord, this morning is that we not read this book in fear, Lord, but we read this book with joy, looking forward to your coming again. Lord, we pray that this book also builds within our hearts an earnest desire for to evangelize. Lord, to take seriously your command in Matthew of taking your gospel to those who have never heard it. Lord, just like you wish that none would fall, build within us a desire that the lost would be saved, not lost to eternal damnation. to be with our pastor this morning, as he delivers your word faithfully and truthfully, and prepare our hearts for what you have for us. Let us walk away different, deeper in love, and a better understanding of your will and purpose for our lives. And we give you all the order, all the honor, and all the glory. In the name of your Son, Jesus the Christ.